This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Variety, I'm Michael Schneider. Eva Longoria still remembers vividly landing the role of a lifetime as Gabrielle Solis on the hit ABC comedy drama Desperate Housewives. And she also remembers the whirlwind experience of the show becoming an immediate hit just after one episode.
I remember we premiered, and in the next morning, you know, we were working. We had our head down and our feet moving, and we were shooting episodes. And I got a call from the producers, and they said, "We're a hit." And I said, "Cool. So what does that mean?"
Yeah.
I really didn't comprehend the monstrosity of it.
Yeah.
And then going to work, going in that day, and every news crew was there. Extra and Access and ET, and everybody was there to do on-set interviews about the new hit. And I was like, why are all these people here? This is odd.
On this edition of the podcast, we talked to Eva Longoria about her favorite episode of TV ever, the pilot to ABC's Desperate Housewives, as well as the new drama Grand Hotel, which she executive produces. Plus, we talked to Grand Hotel star Roslyn Sanchez about her favorite TV episode ever as well. It's a jam-packed edition of My Favorite Episode.
My favorite episode. Let's talk TV. My favorite episode makes me so happy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Variety's My Favorite Episode. Let's give it up for your host, Michael Schneider.
Thank you, DJ Omar Khan, for the new theme song. It's My Favorite Episode, and this time out, we're talking to Grand Hotel executive producer Eva Longoria and star Roslyn Sanchez. Longoria's pick for favorite episode ever is very personal. It's the pilot to Desperate Housewives, the mid-2000s hit that put her on the map. Written by series creator Mark Cherry and directed by Charles McDougall, the episode and series first premiered on October 3, 2004. The episode first introduces us to the neighbors of Wisteria Lane and takes place in the aftermath of the suicide of Mary Alice Young, voiced by Brenda Strong. Among the stars are Terry Hatcher as single mom, Susan Mayer, Marsha Cross as perfectionist Bree Vandekamp, whose poise hides trouble at home, Longoria as Gabrielle Solis, who has a secret, she's carrying on an affair with her teenage gardener, and Felicity Huffman as Lynette Scavo, an advertising exec who put her career on hold to be a stay-at-home mother of four.
Is your finger okay?
Yeah, it's just a small cut.
Let me see.
You know, Mrs. Solis, I really like it when we hook up, but, well, you know, I gotta get my work done, and I can't afford to lose this job.
This table is hand-carved. Carlos had it imported from Italy. It cost him $23,000.
You want to do it on the table this time?
Absolutely.
The pilot episode won three Emmy Awards, including Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy for Felicity Huffman, Outstanding Directing for a Comedy Series for Charles McDougall, and Outstanding Single Camera Picture Editing for a Comedy Series. Mark Cherry was also nominated for Outstanding Writing for a Comedy. For Longoria, the Desperate Housewives pilot was a masterclass in how to create and launch a TV show, and she says she still uses what she learned from that experience as a producer launching her own shows. Later in the episode, we'll talk to Grand Hotel star Roslyn Sanchez, But first, we sit down with Longoria to discuss the launch of Grand Hotel, a summer series for ABC, as well as how Desperate Housewives still impacts her life and her career.
The pilot of Desperate Housewives.
The pilot of Desperate Housewives.
It was a good pilot.
I'm familiar with that show.
Are you? It is the perfect pilot. It really is. You know, it took Mark Cherry 5 years to write it. And
yeah.
It has everything, sets up everything. Super balanced in storytelling. It was Charles McDougall shot was the director, and it was beautiful. It was stylized. It was stylistic. It was so unique. I always reference back to the Desperate Housewives pilot for many things when I'm directing.
Yeah, and pilots obviously are tough, and good pilots set up a show, and sometimes you'll watch a pilot and you'll be like, okay, how are they going to sustain this for second season?
Yeah, so like Lost. When are they getting off the island?
Exactly. But from day one, you watch Desperate Housewives, and it had so much going on.
So much. I mean, there's so many iconic things that happened in the pilot. Lynette Scavo marching into the pool with her heels and the shot of the heels, going on the steps in the water, her in her dress, Marsha Cross asking for, as Bree asking for the basket back for the muffins,
mm-hmm.
Gabby Solis mowing the lawn. There's just so many iconic moments in the pilot that live on still today.
So take me back to the very beginning, when you first read the pilot or that it's, seems like a while ago now, and a lot has happened since then.
A lot has happened. You know, people don't realize or know, but I was the first one cast in Desperate Housewives. They gave me the script very early because I had done L.A. Dragnet with Ed O'Neill for ABC.
That's right.
And it got canceled, and they said, well, we want to do a holding deal with you for ABC, so can you read this script, see if you respond to it? And it was called Desperate Housewives, and I was like, well, that's a dumb title. And I read it, and I said, it's kind of different. It's, like, too different. I had never read anything like that, but I was such a young actress, too. I wasn't really that experienced in script reading and analyzing. And so I was like, I like it. It's cool. She's cool. But it also, I remember, Gabby was 40 as well. Gabby was the same age as Lynette and Susan and Brie. And what happened was ABC made Gabby younger because of the affair with the gardener.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I was able to be in the mix because I was only 28
at
the time.
And that was a show that, because you mentioned that Mark Cherry had been kind of developing it for years, and at one point it was going to be a comedy, and then at some point, like, the idea to turn it into, like, an hour-long drama with comedic aspects, which we hadn't seen a lot of at the time.
Yeah.
This was kind of like a whole new form.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember people sort of being a little confused?
Yes,
like, is it a comedy? Is it a drama?
I remember award season. Where I think the Emmys, we were under drama, and in the Golden Globes, we were under comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was confusing. And I remember, you know, we couldn't be in the drama category because it was Sopranos at the time. And it was, you know, we were like, okay, we're not that.
Right.
And then we weren't Will and Grace. And, you know, we weren't that either. And so it was hard. I remember during award season to categorize this show because it was such a hybrid. And it was such a breaking out of that box.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned you had just done L.A. Dragnet.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Dick Wolf?
Dick Wolf,
yeah, that's right. So where were you in terms of your career at that point? How would you sort of describe?
That was the first thing I had ever done.
Yeah.
I was on Young and the Restless for 3 years. I knew I didn't want to do daytime TV forever. So I went and auditioned for this show called L.A. Dragnet, and I got it. And you know, Dick Wolf, he gets to pick his cast. There was no testing. There was no really other auditions. He's like, great, you got it. See you Monday. So it was really fast. And it was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And the show was already on the air. So there was no pilot pickup, hope we get picked up. It was none of that. It was like on the air, you know, it was Dick Wolf.
Yeah.
Then when I went in for Desperate Housewives, it was like 8 auditions, studio tests, network tests. It was such a process. And then I hope we get picked up. And okay, let's shoot the pot. And it was so many steps of, like, leaps of faith that It was a really different experience than the one with Dragnet.
Yeah, it's always amazing that shows get on the air, period. The amount of sweat and tears that go into it and the process and the whittling down scripts, pilot season, upfront.
But I remember, I don't know if you read Desperate Networks, the book, but it was, you know, ABC was in last place. Every network passed on Desperate Housewives. They thought the script was odd. It didn't really fit into anybody's mold of TV or programming.
Yeah.
And ABC's like, what do we got to lose?
Right. And I also remember, again, Mark Cherry was seen as sort of this washed up sitcom writer. Yeah. It's like, who's this guy? Why is he pitching this show? What is this?
And that same year, it was us, Lost in Grays, that launched ABC.
Yeah.
And that's three really big shows that did really well.
Yeah. So, I mean,
remember, it was Lloyd Braun. Lloyd Braun.
You were name checking Lloyd Braun.
Lloyd Braun was the one who greenlit it. But he never got the credit for it.
He was let go soon after. Mm-hmm. So his revenge was he got to be the voiceover on Lost every week, previously on Lost. But that pilot premiered. And do you remember, I mean, it was immediate. There, not a lot of shows have that like overnight success, but it was truly immediate.
I remember we premiered and in the next morning, you know, we were working. We had our head down and our feet moving and we were shooting episodes. And I got a call from the producers and they said, we're hit. And I said, cool. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
I really didn't comprehend the monstrosity of it.
Yeah.
And then going to work, going in that day, and every news crew was there. Extra and Access and ET and everybody was there to do on-set interviews about the new hit. And I was like, why are all these people here? This is odd.
Well, you mentioned that you think about that pilot a lot when now that as a producer yourself and you've had experience on your own pilots, of course, including Grand Hotel coming to ABC this summer. What did you sort of take away and sort of your experience in doing that pilot and since then and as a producer?
Yeah, I mean, that your director, you and your director, the creator and the director have to be on the same page as far as the vision and setting up the look of the show and setting up the tone of the show. I think the number one thing I take away from with Desperate Housewives pilot is tone. It nailed this tone that was eerie but funny but serious and dramatic but light and hilarious. It just balances tone. It was so specific, and that was Mark Cherry. I mean, he had a very specific idea about what the show should sound and look like. And so every time I'm developing a TV project with a creator or a showrunner, I'm like, what how do you see this? How does this sound? What does it look like? What's the music? What are the cues? What are the shots?
Yeah.
And you have to know all of that. You have to have a vision.
And of course the stories, the string that
the
people
characters,
from first episode on, like what is the mystery behind it? And of course Grand Hotel has that as well.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, you know, very much a similar kind of soap with a lot of comedic elements and beautiful and, you know, set
yeah,
in,
well, Brian Tannen, who created Grand Hotel, studied under Mark Cherry. I mean, he was on Desperate Housewives. He moved on to Devious Maids. He showran Devious Maids. So he comes from that tone of balancing drama with some comedy. Grand Hotel isn't as comedic as Desperate Housewives or Devious. It's definitely more grounded and a more serious character drama.
Yeah.
But it has its light moments that are earned through the characters and their choices.
Yeah, yeah. And that setting, of course.
Yeah.
Where do you guys shoot?
We shot the pilot in Miami, and then we recreated Miami here in Los Angeles. Yep. We recreated the stages, the hotel on sound stages. Beautiful. And the blue skies and the look of the show was really important. You know, we hired a female DP, Allison Kelly. She was the best for the job, but she just happens to be female. So to have a female DP in television is like a unicorn. She's badass. She's amazing. And we really wanted to put women in traditionally male roles. Two of our ADs were female. Our stunt coordinator was female. Our editors were female. We really looked to staff and crew up that way.
Do you have a favorite episode?
Mine, that I directed.
yeah. Tell me about it.
No, I directed the first one back after the pilot, 102. No, it's great. You know, it was really important for me to set the tone for all the directors coming after me on how the set would be run, because we love people to love to come to work. We don't like screamers. We don't like, you know, hurry up and wait. We like a really smooth running machine. And so we really got to create that going forward, and we had some great directors come in and do some really great episodes.
Yeah.
I think our season finale is going to be pretty great.
Yeah. And you're in front of the camera as well.
In front of, yeah. I'm in four episodes.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Eva.
Thank you.
Great seeing you. Good luck with the show.
You. Thank you so much.
In a moment, Grand Hotel star Rosalind Sanchez on her favorite episode of TV from the Lifetime and now Netflix series You. From Variety, this is My Favorite Episode.
This is Daniel Holloway. Join me every Friday for TV Take, Variety's podcast about the television business. In every episode, we feature interviews with stars and showrunners from today's hit shows, as well as conversations with Variety journalists about the key TV headlines of the day. Subscribe or download to TV Take wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. It's My Favorite Episode. I'm Michael Schneider. On Grand Hotel, Rosalind Sanchez plays Gigi Mendoza, the second wife to hotel mogul Santiago Mendoza, played by Damian Bashir. Based on a Spanish format but set in contemporary times, the show is a bit of an upstairs-downstairs look at the scandals and secrets that surround both the Mendoza family and the hotel staff that works for them.
You waited tables at the Ritz.
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm going to start you now on a trial basis. No fraternizing with the staff or guests. That means no sex.
Understood.
We're the last family-owned hotel in Miami Beach.
Welcome, my daughter.
And that is the family.
Who's that?
It's boss man's daughter, Alicia, otherwise known as Off Limits. Danny, let's go.
Rosalind Sanchez dropped by My Favorite Episode to discuss Grand Hotel, as well as the pilot of the series You, which she picked as her favorite episode of all time. It's one of those things where, you know, it's finally going to be coming on the air soon.
Oh, my God,
I know.
It must
be frustrating to be, you know, waiting.
It's been a while.
For so long.
It's been a while. Yeah, we did the pilot in Miami. It was almost 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago at least. Let me see. My baby was 3 months, and he's 18 months. So, it's been a while. So we're excited that it's finally opening.
Yeah, yeah. And when did you shoot the bulk of the series?
We finished a couple of months ago. We did it here at Manhattan Beach Studios. So all of, when was it, January, February, March?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so not too far.
Not too far.
Ago.
Yes,
but
not too far.
Nonetheless, that pilot was a while back. And you shot that at the Fontainebleau.
At the Fontainebleau in Miami. Yes, in Miami. Yeah. Passing as the Riviera Grande.
Yeah, but it looked great, so you had to kind of recreate all of that here in Manhattan Beach.
And if you go to the studios, we were shocked, all the actors, because, you know, when you go to Miami, the Fontainebleau is legendary and it's huge and the lobby is so grand. And when we, because we knew we were going to have to shoot the series in L.A., they needed to find stages that were high enough, the ceilings, for them to be able to recreate this hotel.
Yeah.
And it took them a little bit of time. And then they found this place. And if you go to the sets, you will believe 100% that you are inside the lobby of the Fontainebleau.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
So they totally recreated
they
it.
They did.
That's fantastic.
They did. The set is gorgeous.
So, do you have fun? I mean, it's sudsy. It's your classic soap opera with a twist.
I loved it. I am a big fan of the original format out of Spain.
Yeah.
On Netflix, Gran Hotel, which is a different deal because it's a period piece. You know, it's our creator, our showrunner, that adapted the show to the American market. Brian Tanim took a lot of creative liberties when it came to the original story, but the premise is the same. So, because I was a fan of the original, when I heard Eva said to me, listen, I got the rights to Grand Hotel and I'm going to do the Anglo version, I was like, oh my God, that's going to be amazing. I said, there's going to be a lot of changes. It's going to be Miami, modern Miami. And I was like, really? How are we going to do that? But once I read the pilot, it was just well written. And Brian did Devious Maids. He was part of Devious Maids for 4 years, so I understand his writing very well. So I was excited to see what he was going to come up with, and he did a fabulous job.
Yeah, yeah. How would you describe it? It's kind of a mix of, I mean, there's soap opera, but there's camp, there's some fun elements, there's some comedy attached to it as well.
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit, it's not as funny as Devious. You know, Devious was very
tongue-in-cheek.
This one, it's more of like a family character-driven drama. This one is a dysfunctional family at its finest. You know, they have so many problems, and the upstairs and downstairs dynamics, and how a family-owned hotel, it's full of secrets. You know, and everybody has an agenda, and everybody comes with a baggage, and and just craziness all around. It can be funny, but we're not meant to be funny.
Right.
You know, it's just that there's comedy because the situations sometimes are outrageous. So that's where the comedy is going to come from. But it is a drama. It's a full on primetime drama. We don't want to call it novela, soap opera, because that comes with a stigma. You know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But if you go to the dictionary and you follow the definition of a soap opera, yeah, it has a lot of those elements. It's juicy, it's sexy, it's crazy. It has murder mystery. It has dysfunction. It has laughs. I think people will really enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. So and a fun sort of summer watch.
A perfect summer watch.
Yeah.
You know, the idea is for the next day to people. You know, when you watch really good TV. Not everybody can be Games of Thrones. You know what I mean? Like a Handmaid's Tale, like that kind of phenomenon, you know, that you can't stop thinking and talking about it. But when it comes to summer programming, the idea is for ladies the next day go to work or go to the beauty salon. I mean, can you believe what happened? You know, kind of like the Desperate Housewives effect, the Devious Maids effect. That is a fun topic of conversation the next day.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a fun cast as well. I mean, it's a great group of people. I mean, I love Damien Bashir.
He's amazing.
He's,
I know.
Just everything that he's in is fantastic.
He's really a solid, solid actor. And we were so honored that he said yes to the material. And wait till you see him playing Santiago Mendoza. He looks beautiful. And just the substance that he brings to the material is great.
Yeah. And you mentioned, so was it Eva who brought it to you and said, hey, I want you to do this?
Eva, or? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was Eva. Yeah,
yeah, and you mentioned you had already watched Grand Hotel.
Oh, she knew. Yeah, I said. Yeah. I said, oh my God, you know that I love the original. I said, yeah, and then we have this character that it's kind of like the matriarch of the original, but it has a twist because in the original, Demian's character doesn't exist. They had the entire time the dad is dead. In this case, Demian plays the dad, and he's alive. So my character is like a hybrid. You know, it's like a combination.
Yeah.
And she said, I have this role that I think is going to be the role of a lifetime for you. I know you're going to understand it, so read it and let me know. And I was like, oh, my God, it's a dream, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's great, great. Yeah. So you've stayed in close contact with Eva, it sounds like.
And, yeah, no, we're good friends. You know, we're really, really close. We started together pretty much, you know, and to be able to see her grow and become this force of nature, you know, in many levels, in philanthropy and politics and acting and producing and directing. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. For a force of nature is a good term.
Pretty much.
For
yes.
Yeah. So I asked you also to tell me about your favorite show. And so you mentioned that you've been digging on You.
I love
right
You.
Now.
You know, I don't watch a lot. It's funny because I'm a TV actress and I don't have a lot of time to watch TV. And if you ask me, I gravitate towards So You Think You Can Dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you like more the competition
world
shows,
of dance. Yeah. Just anything that relates to dancing and that form of art. You know, I love it. And it when you get a good dance, it's life changing, you know, to me. But I got into You. I don't even know who told me about You on Netflix. And I saw the first season and I loved it.
Yeah, so going into it, I mean, what did you what were you expecting? It starts off and it seems quaint before it kind of takes this real dark
turn. It gets dark, yeah. You know, to me, I was fascinated with the whole social media element and how, because I am very much into social media, and when you're in this business, it's almost like inevitable for you to be part of the monster that is social media.
Yeah.
You know, and the way they tackle how there's no privacy, nobody's safe, you know, because nowadays, just by going into any social outlet, you can find out so much about a person, you know? And that was freaky to me as a mother of a young daughter. I was like, what am I going to do when she brings that first boy to the house?
Yeah.
Because nowadays, you never know, you know, and people can be so deceptive. Is that a word?
Yeah,
no?
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the heart of this. Yeah, the character played by Penn Badgley, you know, he manages to
appears one thing to be one thing, and it's sick. He's sick. He has mental issues. But if you meet somebody like that tomorrow walking down the street and you start a conversation, not in a million years, you will even think
yeah.
that that person has all these demons, you know, and it's sad, you know, as a woman to know that.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is, he has these demons, but then he has the tools at his fingertips to insert himself into this person's
exactly.
life. And it's exactly. and you can do it in such a subtle way, but we all exactly. leave these little crumbs
we do.
In our social media lives, you know, where we've gone, what we like, what we eat, who we hang out with. If someone really wanted to insert themselves into your life, they could find a way.
They can find a way, and they're magicians at it. You know, when somebody has the mind to even go there and become that person, they're highly intelligent, you know, and the way that they go about researching and doing things, it's we wouldn't even think about that. And the way they do it is like it's like magic. And like you said, we are giving them the resources to be able to find things out very easily, yeah. and we don't even know we're doing it.
You know? Hopefully they don't have kill rooms like Penn Badgley.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I know. It's a dark message, you know. But for me, it was fascinating to watch and be like, oh, my God, you know, there's no privacy anymore. There's no mystery anymore. There's nothing. You know, when you meet people, you have to be so smart yeah. about everything you say, about every step, and just trying to be a good judge of character. You know, and it's hard.
Well, especially for someone in the public eye like yourself. So yeah. how active are you on social media?
I am pretty active, and I enjoy it, you know, and it's weird with me because I come from, nobody in my family is part of this business, you know, and I've been blessed enough to be able to move to this country and have a great career, and I have other aspirations when it comes to social work and philanthropy, and I like to produce, so by using social media, you can actually expose, you know, and help and use it in a very, very positive way.
Yeah.
So there's that side of me that says I have to get followers. I have to expose my life to be relatable, to create a platform
yeah.
for people to be interested in what I have to say. But then you talk to somebody like my husband, which he's also part of the business, you know, and he's not as open as me. And because we have kids, he's always like, Ross, like, why are you posting this about Sabella? Why are you posting this about Dylan? I'm going, one, because I'm incredibly proud of my kids
yeah.
and I want the world to know
yeah,
that
yeah.
they're
look how
incredible
cute they are.
You know, because they're amazing,
yeah.
you know, and it took me a long time and a lot of work to get pregnant, so I want everybody to know that,
right.
that I have children.
Yeah.
And also because I feel that when people relate to you and they feel like they know you, they'll consume whatever you consume, you know, and they will listen when you're talking about stray dogs in Puerto Rico and when you're talking about the crisis in the border, you know, because you have a point of view
yeah.
that they want to hear about. And the only way you get that, I believe, and I might be wrong, is if they feel like they're part of your family, if they feel like you're giving them something that is a little piece of you that
yeah.
is important to you. Otherwise, they don't care. I might be wrong. Maybe the right strategy is I'm going to be very private. I'm not going to give in any. I don't want to say anything. So when I say something, everybody's shocked and they want to hear about it. But you know, it's a very fine line. I don't know.
Yeah, it is, and it's sort of, you know, in when you're an entertainer, you also, you know, you want to have a brand. You want people to sort of know who you are and have sort of an affinity for
yeah.
you, because it's important to stay in the public limelight to some degree.
Of course.
So, you know, you don't want to be completely out of sight, out of mind, or you might miss out on some great jobs.
I do, and you know what's crazy? And I didn't want to believe that this was true, but it's true. Even... You know, acting and to be able to get a job as an actor nowadays, it's not only about your ability or the craft or how many years you study or your resume, you know, because social media and pop culture is so huge. Even studios now are taking into consideration how many followers you have, the same way advertisers do on brands, right? If you want to
yeah.
create a product or if you want to book a big campaign, they look at your social media awareness. But even to get acting jobs, and I know this for a fact, you know, I've been part of, my husband was part of a show that they were looking for a girl to play his love interest, and they tested two people.
Yeah.
Both beautiful, both equally talented, they're both with great resumes, and the one that got it was the one that had more followers, because to the studio was important. I was floored.
Yeah, yeah.
I was floored.
Yeah.
But it happens, you know, and it's something that we have to accept, and... It is what it is.
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's, yeah. and it makes sense when you think about it. You see all these people who are sort of making the transition now, who are YouTube stars or who
exactly
first
right.
made it in social. And,
exactly right.
And when they promote them to be on shows, they're like, look at how many followers
exactly
they have.
Exactly right.
You know, they have millions of people.
You could be talentless. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you have followers, you're somebody.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
And the goal is to obviously get them to, you know, move over to a traditional, say, TV
exactly.
show.
Exactly.
It's you know, the networks, they're kind of running scared, too. They're trying to figure out how do we, like, you know, maintain our relevance.
And I get it. Listen, and you can't be mad at them because, like, I'm not an executive at a network, right? But if I was, right, and if I was in that crazy, stressful, you know, position, you have to do what you have to do. And because everything transitions, you know, and everything evolves. The way the climate of the business nowadays, it's evolving, even with streaming. You know, there's so much content and there's so much competition that networks are going crazy trying to figure out how we're going to be able to survive and compete,
yeah.
you know, and become and stay in the position that we're at. So as an executive, if it means we're going to have to hire whoever has more followers, you know, to be able to survive, you do what you have to do. You're running a business, you know, so you can't be mad at that.
How active are you in terms of interacting with fans? Like, if they have, excuse me, if they have questions for you about shows, you know, or projects that you're working on, and you know, they want to know everything.
Yeah.
So how active are you in terms of answering their questions or interacting with them?
I could be more, but I'm the one. It's funny because people think, because the amount of followers that I have, that I have a team of people that deals with my social media element, and I don't. I do it myself. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, no, there's no way you post, and yeah, I do. So I don't have time, and I can't read everything. You know, but I do. You know, sometimes I engage. You know, and I should be better at doing the Facebook lives and the Instagram takeovers and things that are actually live and interactive. So you're like at the moment going back and forth. I don't do that a lot, but I do post things. And if somebody has a question and if I get to read it and if it's not inappropriate, you know,
yeah.
I will answer. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's part of the job now,
yes,
I suppose.
Of course.
Now, what do you do about trolls? Because that's, you know, obviously the dark side, the ugly side of
yeah.
all this is, you know, people, you know, under the cloud of anonymity
yeah.
can be really nasty.
Nasty. It's brutal and it's sad. You know, I block. If I happen to read something that I think is mean and uncalled for, I block the person. At the beginning, I used to engage and just answer, you know, and just have this whole thing. And then I realized, why am I even answering? You know, I'm offended. I didn't like the comment. I just have to let it go. So I just block people now. And it, you know, it's part of, it is what it is. If you expose yourself, you have to be able to take it.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, because it's very easy for somebody to be inside a room that nobody sees who you are. Nobody knows anything about you to just be mean and be disrespectful and just be negative,
yeah.
you know. But I usually... If I'm going to post something that I know is going to have some kind of reaction because it's something political, I usually mention as part of the text of whatever I write, this is just my opinion and I will appreciate, you know, if you have something mean to say, don't, you know, because this is just my point of view.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one thing. And I know a number of performers who, you know, especially right now in the world, feel like, you know, I have a platform, you know, and you know, I do have something to say,
yeah.
and I have the right to say it.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of people, you know, try to tear down celebrities and say, you're just a celebrity. Go back and entertain
yes.
me. Like, you know,
yes.
stop giving me your political views.
Yeah.
But, well, wait a second. I'm also a citizen.
Exactly.
I'm also a human being. I have feelings and I have a platform.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't I give my opinions
yeah.
and sort of share, you know, what, you know, and maybe shine a spotlight on some inequalities
yeah.
that I think are out there. You know, so you have to balance that, right?
I think it's important. And I think if you have the ability and the platform to do it, then again, you have to also accept that you might get a lot of people that will not follow you because
yeah.
they don't agree with what you're saying. You know what? I follow this lady, Alisa Milano, that I
yeah.
know well because she worked with my husband and she's lovely.
Yeah.
Alisa is becoming more and more and more political. You know, it's almost like she has found a calling, you know, and she's incredibly smart, you
yeah.
know, and what she's doing is she's pushing the envelope constantly, constantly. And because of that, the outcome is going to be you're going to have a lot of people look up to you and adore you and you might be able to affect in a positive way, but you're going to have a lot of people that are going to hate you and they're just going to be mean and they're going to want to cause some harm. And she's dealing with it, you know, and it's brutal.
Yeah.
It's brutal, but God bless her that still she believes that her platform is important, that what she has to say is valid, And she's just going like this and moving full force, yeah. You know, and regardless of the consequences, because it seems like her north now is to get into politics or to be able to have a social component, you know, and be a voice. Yeah. And I think it's incredible. But that's a choice you have to make, you know, yeah. Because it might affect your career at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. You have to decide, and everyone's different, sort of, you know, what do I feel is important right now?
Exactly.
And if I have this platform, you know, what should I use?
I have another good friend that is in the business that it's a personality. He's doing it all. He's doing it all. But he's very careful, and he's like, I do have my point of view, but I don't take sides. I interview a lot of people.
Yeah.
So nobody needs to know exactly how I feel
right.
about anybody, you know what I mean? Or when I vote, who am I voting for? You know, he's just like, I'm not interested. I do have the platform to be able to pick sides, you know, and I have a great voice. It's not my calling.
Yeah.
I just want to interview and do my job.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's amazing, you know, and you have to respect that too.
Yeah. Where do you fall right now?
I think I don't get too involved. I think I'm vocal. I think people know what's what are my political views, you know, and people know what I feel about the border crisis. You know, I even went to the border with Eva, as a matter of fact, you know. So I think I'm pretty open when it comes to this is who I am, but I don't. No, I do. Maybe I do. I'm just not taking the stance like Alisa of saying, this is my North and Chelsea Handler. You know what I mean? This is what I'm a comedian. I'm a personality.
Yeah.
But I'm fighting for this right now. Right now, yeah. I'm fighting for my show, and I'm fighting for my kids. And I want to have a clean, beautiful career, having a point of view, but not getting completely involved. Maybe that will change. Maybe at some point I'm going to be like, you know what? I don't want to continue just looking in and like, testing the water and walking out, you know, because I just want to play it safe. Maybe at some point I'm going to be full force. I'm not there yet.
Yeah. No, it sounds like a good balance right now. So when you watch a show like You, is that something that you say, oh, I want to be on that show?
Oh,
do you ever like, you know, call up your people and say, hey, can you get me something on this?
Or? I have. You know what? With You, I did. And the last time that I did like a lot was when Orange is the New Black came out. I was obsessed. And I was like, I will just walk. I don't even have to speak. I want to be part of it so badly. I just tell them that I just want to walk and be there. but it happens. Yeah, there's shows that you're like, oh, my God, it'll be – there's so many. You know, there are so the TV content nowadays and even streaming, there's some really good shit going on. You know, like really good that you're like, wow. Even – and for me, because I'm Puerto Rican, I'm bilingual, so I do a lot in the Latino market – even content out of Spain, out of Argentina, out of Chile that I watch and I just go, I want to be part of that so badly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's changing. I look at, you mentioned Spain. Netflix is doing so much original content
incredible.
Out there right now.
Incredible. And that's why a lot of people from here, there's so many Anglo adaptations of content coming out of Spain and out of Chile because it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Obviously, Grand Hotel coming up. What else are you excited about? What should be keeping an eye on?
Oh, my God. Well, Grand Hotel opening June 17th. Yeah. Guys, I hope everybody loves it as much as we did. I had a crazy conversation with a colleague from a show called A Million Little Pieces.
Yeah.
His name is James Roday.
Yeah, also on ABC.
Correct. I know James for many years because we did Ryan Caulfield Year One.
Oh,
this was a TV show for Fox.
I remember that. Yeah, never got a year two, unfortunately.
Never got a year two. Not only that, we got picked up for first season. We were picked up for 22 or 13. I don't believe this is many, many years back. I believe Kevin Fox was the showrunner, and I'll never forget. We're doing episode 7. We're shooting downtown.
Uh-huh.
It's been airing, so I think that week. Episode 4 had air, or 3 or something like that. We were competing against Major League Baseball. The numbers, the ratings were bad. And and this has never happened to me before, and this is a true story. We're in the middle of shooting a scene. We see the showrunner come over to set.
Yeah.
Everybody stop. Kevin has to say something. He got up into something, grabbed a thing.
Like a bullhorn, yeah.
And said, everybody can pack. We've been canceled.
Oh, like in the middle of the
scene?
It
was brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. And it was such a shame because it was such a wonderful show. And I don't know whatever happened with Sean. I think it was Sean Marr, was the name of the lead guy. He just graduated from, I think it was Juilliard. He was a gem, you know, a great talent. So James was one of the cast members. I was the only female cop. It was all guys, and I was the only female cop. Fast forward to last, not these upfronts that just happened, the upfronts before Grand Hotel went, and
we were both
mid-season replacement shows, and we got moved to summer, but A Million Little Pieces came out. And I haven't seen James more than 12 years. So we're there, we're celebrating, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And he says, Ross, when are you going to direct? And I'm going, oh my God, I can't even think about it. You know what I mean? Like, I know, I want to, and I know how to do it, but I don't know how to tackle it. I don't know the technical names of lenses. You know what I mean? I'm so intimidated. And he goes, oh, you know, you can do it. You need to direct. I'm going, oh my God, are you crazy? I'm going, you need to direct. And it was interesting because I don't know why he felt compelled to tell me that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, oh, that's so good to see you. Okay, Papa, I love you. Bye. That night, my husband was also there because he was doing The Rookie, which is also another ABC show. So we went to, and this is a true story, we went to bed that night, like at 3 in the morning. I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I wake him up and I said, Eric, I'm going to direct. And he's like, he's sleeping. And what are you talking about? I'm going, I'm going to direct. He went back to bed, doesn't even remember I did that. Fast forward to now, June 17th, the day where I had to move it 1 week. June 24th, a week after Grand Hotel premieres, I'm directing my first short film in Puerto Rico about a topic that is very dear to my heart, which is stray dogs.
Yeah.
And the importance of adopt, don't shop. You know, I have a foundation in Puerto Rico with animals, and I said, if I'm going to direct for the first time, it has to be something that I care about, which is this topic.
Yeah.
And it has to be in my country, which I love.
Yeah.
And I wrote it, and I'm doing it, and I'm petrified, and I'm super nervous. And I saw James this last week in New York for the upfronts.
Yeah.
And we hugged, and I said, you're not going to believe what you're going to do. I'm directing my first short film. And he was so happy. I'm going, it was because of you, because you told me to do it.
That's
and
fantastic.
He was so, so proud and so excited. And he's like, enjoy it. You're going to do great. So I'm in the middle of pre-production. It is stressful. I am dying, but I am very excited.
Yeah, that is fantastic.
Yeah, very excited.
Yeah, first step on maybe directing some TV, some...
That'll be amazing. Let me see how it goes. I got a phenomenal DP out of Puerto Rico. It's full 100% Puerto Rican talent, and the crew is all Puerto Rican. It's my first attempt. I'm very excited. I think it's going to do great. Of course, we want to send it to festivals and let's see what happens with the whole thing. But if I love it and if at the end when we edit I have a gem, I'm going to be very confident and positive to be able to go to Brian Tanim and Eva and saying, guys, this is my presentation. You know what I mean? Check it out.
Yeah.
And would you allow me to direct something? You know, and they're incredibly supportive. So hopefully, let's see.
Yeah. I think the next goal after that is to direct an episode of A Million Little Things. So then you're actually
that'd
directing
really
James
Rene. That'd be awesome.
And comes full circle.
That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing.
Well, congrats on Grand Hotel.
Thank you.
And good luck with the directing.
Yes,
looking forward
thank
to hearing
you so
more
much.
About that. And,
yeah,
and all
I'm
the
excited.
Best to you, Ross.
Thank you.
Thanks
I appreciate
by.
That. Thank you.
And that's it for this edition of My Favorite Episode. Join us again next time as we once again explore another guest pick. And be sure to subscribe to My Favorite Episode on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com for your daily fix of TV news, analysis, and reviews. I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you again next time.